I think people at F&B love to torture ourselves. But with the pain comes the joy of serving people, seeing people smile, eating their food.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiaowei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and the truths they uncover along the way. This week's guest is Chinren Yi, the super honest, down-to-earth entrepreneur behind My Burger Lab, the burger chain which took Malaysia by storm. From skipping school just so he could spend more time on the shop floors of his first job at a coffee shop, to taking his first bites of a legendary In-N-Out burger in California, Rennie talks about how he found love in serving people food that would make them smile. But his journey up hasn't been all burgers and rainbows. Weathering the pandemic, navigating painful co-founder breakups, and realizing the pitfalls of hustle culture, Rennie is prioritizing business longevity and personal happiness over simply stacking chips. On building Malaysia's first cult classic burger brand, here's my conversation with the co-founder and managing director of My Burger Lab, Chinren Yi. Hi, Rennie. Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia. It's so good to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to be on here. Thanks for having me, Xiaowei.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on board. So we're going to kick off with some quick fire questions, as we usually do for every episode. So the first question is, can you describe what you do in one sentence?
I flip burgers.
Oh, I love that. What's your mantra in life?
Be happy.
I like that. That's also the mantra for your business, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, next question is, can you tell me your favorite choice of burger? Might be a difficult question.
Good old cheeseburger. Simple, plain and easy.
Oh, I like that too. Okay. And final question, can you complete this sentence? I'm happiest when?
I'm having fun. Well, I almost wanted to say I'm happiest when I'm playing pickleball, but I find that that's just a momentary thing. But yeah, I'm happiest when I'm having fun.
Yeah, pickleball is your latest obsession, right? As we spoke about
yes,
this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes, it is.
All right. So let's start from the beginning right now, Rennie. So growing up, can you tell me, what were you like as a kid?
I was very curious. I am always having all this internalizing thought and trying to figure out if people can hear my thoughts. I am also very experimental, I would say. However, I discovered that since I was young, one of the things that I was very good at was mimicking others. And I think this will come into our conversation a little bit later, but I realized that, you know, if I have to do art or if I have to come up with something creative, I can take inspiration from others and create something of my own. So mimicry, I think, was a superpower I had when I was young, and I realized it back then. Mm.
So when you say mimicking people, do you mean like doing impressions as well of people talking?
Oh, no, I'm terrible at that. But what I mean is what I see, I can recreate physically, whether it's art, whether it's an idea. So that's what I realize.
Oh, can you tell me an example of how you mimic someone or maybe their art or their work?
Yeah, well, I remember back in the days, I had to submit this art piece and it was an exam, meaning that we were given an hour and a half and we had to paint something in class. So I know that before the exam, I actually tried to memorize a few themes that I knew was going to come out. And during the exam, I basically recreated the art piece that I remembered. I know people to memorize, you know, books to go into the exam. But for me, I tried to memorize art. It used to work a lot better back then. But these days, I think because of me not honing that skill, if you ask me to redo that, I don't think I can. Now, I'm not saying that I did a one for one and it was damn good, but it wasn't enough that I got an A for it from my art teacher.
Isn't that the top grade though, A?
Yeah, but my teacher was also very lenient and we were like really young. So I thought she could have been very forgiving.
How young were you at this point?
I think it was around, I would say 13 years.
Mm, okay. So secondary school.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and what was your childhood like? What your parents, how did they bring you up? What were the values that they instilled in you?
My parents put a lot, just like every other Asian parent, we focus a lot on education. My dad tried to make sure that we had tuition classes after a long day of class and try to give the best education that he could afford. The weekends are always packed with activities and more tuition classes, which was normal back then. But I think upon looking at it, I wish that we had more, I guess, family time mm-hmm. and not so academic or activity driven. Yeah, weekends.
Yeah, what kind of family time were you hoping for? Was it more like hanging out outdoors together, doing something like a sport together or what
yeah,
did you
I
have
think
in mind?
I can only give an answer of what I have in mind right now. But back then as a kid, I guess I didn't know better. It was just life as per usual, right? Mm-hmm. So looking back, I think that just going out and just having picnics and just playing sport. I mean, as a family, that would have been nice. Not to say that we didn't do that at all, or we did, but I wish there were more of that.
Of course. Okay. And do you recall a formative experience that really shaped you to who you are today or how you think today?
Probably not in those early years, but I think for me, I decided that I wanted to be my own person and do my own thing much later in the years where I actually traveled abroad during one of my gap years to work as a server in Yellowstone National Park in US. Yeah. And there I was, you know, staring up into the sky, looking at the Milky Way and realizing that, you know, we only have this one life, that, you know, if a bear or a wolf, and they were, you know, something that was quite abundant in the park, came and attacked me, my life would end there. And I didn't want to go through the route of graduating and then working for the man. So I was studying mechanical engineering back then. So yeah. I didn't want to go back and, you know, be going through the rat race. And it was something that scared me. And I said, you know what? I just want to do what makes me happy. And I realized that B gave me some level of joy. And it was something that I didn't dare pursue. So that was a life-changing moment for me to say, you know what? I'm going to drop my idea of being an engineer. So I did finish my degree, but upon graduation, I knew very well that that was not a career that I wanted to pursue. And I wanted to try and pursue a career in F&B. And that's how I ended up where I am today.
But actually, what brought you to the US and actually work as a server? Like, why was the decision made?
Oh, well, I was in uni then, and there was a program called Work and Travel US, which I think a lot of Singaporeans do take up as well. And out of all the places that I picked, we could have worked at airports or fun fairs and whatnot, I chose to be in a national park because I just wanted to be away from the hustle and bustle of the city. Yeah. And I think it was a good choice. That was when I realized that isolation gave me a lot of time to think about who I am as a person and what do I want to be moving forward.
Because you mentioned that you were an introvert, but obviously starting your own business with My Burger Lab, it actually pushed you to become an extrovert. So that's quite different from how you were when you were younger.
I would say it pushed me to develop the skills to be an extrovert. I didn't like talking to people, but under certain capacity. So as a server, while I did have to talk to people, but I was under control. I didn't have to be constantly creating conversation if I didn't want to. So I felt like there was some level of control there. But coming out to be an entrepreneur, I didn't know that I have to be out in public and talking so much. But I realized that, you know, part of business is putting a part of yourself into what you're doing to show people the sincerity, how genuine you are about your service and your products. So it became part and parcel of running a business. But I also learned that, you know, at the end of the day, I can go home and I can recompose myself and let my introvert energy recharge. Yeah. So it wasn't so much about picking a side, but understanding what needs to be done, enjoying the process and adapting to, you know, the entrepreneurial life.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I think a lot of us also in a work setting, we have to be a certain way. A lot of the times we actually become more extroverted than our usual self when we're at home, right? When we're at home, we're a lot quieter, we talk less, we do more reflections, and we become more introverted in that sense.
And some people like to think that that's not being true to yourself or that's being fake. I don't believe in that. I feel like, you know, you can be different versions of yourself and it is your true self. It's just that, you know, different occasion calls for different level of energy and you just gotta adapt to that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about your aha moment. You briefly mentioned that just now when you were in the US for your work and travel. But because we'd like to talk about aha moments on Crazy Smart Asia, can you share a little bit more about your aha moment and why you decided to start your own burger joint?
Okay, so part of the aha moment was definitely me, you know, camping under the stars and having this realization that I should do whatever that makes me happy. And the other second aha moment would be when I was traveling after the work and travel experience. And I went to, I believe, California and tried In and Out for the first time in my life.
Ooh.
And that was when I realized that, hey, you know, there's this really great way to make burgers that I've not had before in Malaysia. So we have to understand that, you know, this is about 15 years back in Malaysia. We have our street burgers, our Ramly burgers, right? And then we have our fast food burgers, which is McDonald's so on. And then after that, it's immediately whether it's TGIF, Chili's or Hotel Gourmet burgers. So there was a gap in between that I realized, oh, fast food burger can be artisanal as well. And I think that's what In-N-Out gave me an experience. And I thought, hey, no one else is doing this in Malaysia. It's something that we could penetrate the market with.
Yeah. What did you have at In-N-Out Burger that made you think that way?
Well, so before going in, a lot of people say, oh, if you're in California, you got to go try the In-N-Out. And
you have to.
Yeah. So I wasn't just reading so much about what the menu was, but I started reading up about what they, as a business, as a company, believed in. One of the things that really stood out to me was they own their own farm, so they can control the quality of the meat that they use. And one of the reasons why In-N-Out is only found on the West Coast of America is because they believe that they will only open within a radius of 60 miles from their farm.
Oh, I see.
We will see on the West Coast.
Oh, right? That's interesting.
So I thought, holy cow, no pun intended. They are so adamant about this philosophy about keeping their beef fresh that they were willing to go that far. And that really impressed me. And of course, they have, you know, all this secret menu and they cook their burgers animal style. And you got to know how to order it to get the animal style burger. And I thought, and prior to this, like I said, I've never had this kind of experience. So it made a huge imprint on me. And I realized, hey, burgers are not just, you know, what we see in McDonald's, but it can be such a fun product and such a versatile product that you can elevate to the next level. And that's what we tried. To this day, I don't have our own farm yet. It's an end goal, hopefully down the road that we can achieve. But we believe that we were able to some extent elevate the burger experience for Malaysians in the last 11, 12 years that we've been around.
Yeah, and you guys use your own bamboo charcoal buns, right? That's, I think, your signature.
Yes,
flavor?
That is our signature to date. Yeah. It was meant to be a little gimmick in the beginning just to get people taking hits. And we tried to phase it out in the first 2 months of our business because people came for it and it was busy. And to me, I didn't want to be known as the charcoal burger guy or the charcoal burger business. And we slowly phased it out. So we did 50-50, meaning that when you came into my burger lab, you could have gotten a charcoal bread or you could have gotten a regular potato bread. Both were the same recipe other than the charcoal powder that was included in the bun.
Yeah.
But people were like, no, if it's just a regular bun, I don't want it. I want a charcoal burger. So we stuck to it and, you know, it's an icon, you know, for us to this date. So yeah, however, I don't like to be known as just the charcoal burger joint, but we want to compete against some of the best burgers that Malaysians have to offer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think back in the days, right now, I think it's very common. You can find charcoal buns or charcoal burgers concept everywhere.
Yeah.
Back in the days, it was, I guess, due to the shock factor. And we also introduced this to Malaysia at the right time. So if we can just dial this back to 2012, this is when 3G just started becoming accessible. This is when Facebook and Instagram, I would say people started using it to show off their lifestyle, right? Remember?
Yeah.
So people were using it to show off what they were eating. So I realized that it was the right timing at that time. And it had such a huge shock factor to everyone that saw it on their Facebook, you know, profile feed. So that helped a lot in propagating the idea that, this is a cool product. This is something that is rare. You've not seen this before. But thankfully, people came for the charcoal burger and then they talked about how good it tasted as well. So while it was our claim to fame and, you know, it was the right timing, I feel that if we had done that maybe in 2020 or even 2024, it might not have the same effect as it did back then.
It would have looked quite outdated, right? Actually, yes, because yes. Charcoal burgers have been around for a while now, actually.
I like to claim that we were the first person that started this whole viral thing. But prior to us, you won't see any charcoal viral posts going around. But I want to also say that, you know, we were not the first person to do anything charcoal. The Japanese already had their charcoal bun or charcoal bread, but it was not, you know, super famous. And then we saw another place in France that have done it. But again, not super famous. But we realized after we went viral, everything else in the years to come became charcoal as well. So we would like to partially credit for you know, all the charcoal products that we see out there in the market.
Yeah. Actually, what you're talking about is quite interesting because you're thinking about marketing even before you launch your product, right? And not a lot of startups either have the privilege to think about that because they're obviously focusing on building product and fundraising or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But from your perspective, do you think it's important for founders or for startup owners to think about marketing immediately from the get-go before they launch their product?
I think it's definitely essential as part of the thought process. For us, we wanted to stand out. We didn't know that social media would play such a huge role at that point in time. And we realized that when we took a picture of our product, a production of our product, it didn't stand out, meaning that you can't tell that this was done in another restaurant.
Yeah.
So in a desperate search to differentiate ourselves, we happened to chance upon the charcoal powder concept. So were we thinking about marketing at any time? Maybe subconsciously, but it wasn't a conscious decision. But hindsight, yes, everything that a startup should be thinking about other than having a good product and a good service is how do you market that product?
Okay. And what did it take for you to go from like an idea, you want to start your own burger joint, to actually setting up the business? Can you recall like what was the most challenging, difficult, or the moment that you struggled the most during this process of starting your business?
Honestly, there was not much struggle. Why do I say that? It's because, like I said, I try to live life just trying to have fun, right? So to me, the startup of the project was all about, okay, let's cook some burgers, let's have some friends over, have a drink, and then just have fun. So the whole process from inception of the idea to doing R&D at home and then speaking to one of our friends who own a restaurant to ask if we could do a pop-up, it was just an exciting process throughout. Mm-hmm. And every bump that we met was, I guess, part of the journey. It wasn't something that we said, oh, no, this is such a big problem. We're going to think twice about whether we want to move forward with this project or not. But no, everything was met with an energy that, hey, this is part of the process, enjoy the process. I don't know where I got that idea from. Definitely not an original idea of myself, but I did read somewhere that, you know, in any journey, enjoy the process, right? Not just the idea of getting to the destination. So
not the end goal. Yeah.
Not the end goal. So with that in mind, with the energy in mind, me, Charming, we get my original founders, we carried forward, you know, going over every hurdle, knowing that it would make us better, it would make the business better as we overcome those problems. Because as you know, problems, you trade, you know, your past problems for better but bigger problems. This is something that was said by the guy who wrote How to Not Give Up. But the idea of us growing as an individual and even as a business is that you will never get out of problems. You only trade yourself for bigger but better problems.
Oh, I like that. That's really philosophical.
It is. Let me try to figure out who said it.
It's The Art of Not Giving a Fuck, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I forgot the author's name either. I think I actually have the book, but I forgot.
Have
the
you read it?
Name. I have read it.
Yes.
But it was quite a while back. Yeah.
Yes, Mark Manson.
Okay.
Yeah, so one of the things that he said, and this is not, I mean, I only realized this later on as I read his book, because his book came out much later, you know, after I started my business. But it is life, right? If you think about it, when you were a primary school kid, your biggest challenge was maybe for UPSR. And then when you're in high school, then it's SPM. It's that the final exams that you have to do, right?
The big exams, right? Yeah. At the end of every year.
And then you think, how great would it be if I'm already an adult working and earning my own money? And here we are as an adult earning our own money, but we have bigger problems, but we don't have to take exams anymore, right? So you trade your, you know, as you grow, you trade smaller problems to bigger problems, but better problems, meaning you're in a better position in life. For me right now, you know, we had to go through the pandemic. We had to deal with, you know, fund issues. We have to deal with staffing issues and so on. But they were all a part of the journey. They are still a part of the journey, but I can say that I don't mind having the problems I have now compared to some of the problems I had when we just started. Those were considered small problems, even though at that point in time, we were like, oh no,
they were huge, right?
There's fire coming out of the kitchen. What is going on? Right. But we learn from that. We put things in place so that there's no more fire in the kitchen. And we worry about different things right now. We worry about where to find funds to continue growing. How do we get our halal certification? Different challenges.
Yeah, it's always true. I think when you look back on the issues or the problems that you faced previously, you always think that, oh, actually that was not too big. What I'm dealing with now might be bigger. It's it's always smaller upon retrospect, right? But when you're in the moment, it's huge.
Yes.
It's like a life or death situation.
Yeah, exactly. We don't even have to look so far. I mean, think of your biggest problem last year. And if you look at where you are right now, most likely that problem has already resolved itself.
Mm. And is that something that you tell yourself consistently whenever you're dealing with a problem?
Yes. Whatever problem I'm dealing with, no matter how hard it gets, it will be a problem of the past as I push forward.
Mm. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about F&B, right? So you decided to go into F&B after, obviously, the experience being a server in America. But was there actually initial interest in food already or F&B at all when you were younger?
Yes. I would say that when I was in college, when I had limited spending money, I wanted to get a part-time job and I found myself a job in a local Starbucks. And that was when I got, and I was glad it was Starbucks because I don't want to be quoted wrongly here. I know there's a lot of boycott for Starbucks. But what I'm trying to say is that back then when I was working for Starbucks and I was glad it was Starbucks that I worked for was that they had a very good work culture, very good values that they train and they teach you about. And that showed me that F&B is not just about serving food. There's something bigger to it. And that got me captivated. In fact, on some days I would skip class that I didn't like just to go to work because I wanted to be serving people. And at the time I didn't know about it. But that was my first taste of hospitality and the joy you get from serving people.
Mm. So this was before you actually went to America?
That's correct.
I see. Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You've mentioned this before, that you were inspired by some of the biggest brands like In-N-Out and also Shake Shack, right, in Burgerland. But aside from its country of origin, which is Malaysia for My Burger Lab, how did you want My Burger Lab to be the same or to be different from these giants?
Well, if this question was asked to me 10 years ago, we would like to be like them. Mm. But, you know, we have grown over the years and we have developed our own personality and who we want to be. I mean, we do want to champion local flavors. So if you come to My Burger Lab, you will see a lot of Asian themed flavors combined with Western burger concepts.
Yeah.
And to us, that is where our strength lies. We have more diverse of a flavor profile than, unfortunately, some of the Western options. That's why, while I did say I do prefer a simple cheeseburger is because I've been developing a lot of crazy fun stuff that I'm quite tired of. So a simple one makes sense for me. However, our customers, when they come to my burger lab, they're looking for something a little bit more funky, a little bit more different. So to me, it's all about, you know, paving our own path. And for us, doing a simple cheeseburger or doing a barbecue cheeseburger is easy. But how do you feature the local flavors, whether it's a laksa burger, whether it's a salted egg yolk burger, or whether it is what I'm very proud of that's on our menu, a budu burger. So budu is a fermented fish sauce a lot of people have not heard of. So how do we bring this to international stage, hopefully down the road? And that's something that I want to slowly build and showcase to the world when the opportunity comes.
Would you say that right from the get-go, you actually experienced success with your burgers and your brand?
I mean, if you look at the queue that was standing outside our door, that would be the first success we had because we were able to get people to the doors. But, you know, I also have learned that that is not a metric for success.
Yeah.
To me, I think the ability to provide jobs and career growth for my team is a definition of success for me at this point.
Yeah.
And continue to scale the business so that, you know, more people can have access to our type of products and more people can have better job environment while working with us. That's what I'm aiming for. And hopefully in that process, we get to serve more people. We get to, you know, enter new markets in different countries. And that's the hope and dream that I have for now. I'm not asking for too much, hopefully, but I think focusing on what's important to us, which is the people first, and everything else is just a byproduct of that process.
Yeah. We will come to talking about the people in a bit because I know that's quite a big... I mean, you mentioned that it's a very important part of your business, right? But so you actually experienced quite a bit of success at the beginning and you made it, so to speak, right? You didn't experience any, I guess, disappointing moment when you first launched. But how were you going to sustain that initial success? What were the next steps to scaling the business?
So one thing that I was very wary of with how popular we were in the first 1-2 years was that what happens when this slows down? What happens when this hype or this trend slows down? So we were very, I guess, wary of that particular scenario. It became almost like a mission for us to figure out how do we stay relevant continuously. And the answer was fairly simple at that point in time. Right now, we're going through another phase in our business. I'll go into that later. But at the time, 3-4 years in, we realized that, okay, there's a bit of waning effect when it comes to, you know, the popularity or how often people come to our store.
Yeah, the novelty is wearing off, right?
Yes, it is. And we realized that as long as we are able to get the college students interested, then we have a good bet that we will stay relevant. And why is that the case? We realized that they were the people that decides what's cool and what's not. And if they are the ones that constantly talking about it, they will bring their older brothers who might be already working or their family members to come and have a meal with us. So a lot of our marketing back in the days were very focused on college and uni students. And that was how we stood relevant.
Even from the beginning?
Yes, even from the beginning.
Okay.
But we didn't realize that until 2-3 years into our business that was why we were popular.
So it was the college kids that were really pushing up your popularity.
That's correct. That's correct. So we put a lot more effort into reaching out to them, making sure that, you know, the colleges, whenever they have prom nights, part of the sponsorship, if there are activities, we are always involved in some level, or when we make jokes or memes, it's relevant to them. So as long as they think that or believe that we are cool, quote unquote cool, then we continue to stay relevant in their mind and in their circle. And they are the one that will, I guess, continue to bring in the sales through their family members generally through their family members. That's what we realized. But so, a lot of things have changed post the pandemic.
Okay. So actually relying on going viral is obviously not sustainable, right? But identifying the audience that you want to target and that's responding and engaging with your brand is the most important.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So during the pandemic, you were not only a business leader, obviously, you were quite a community leader also. Like, you were one of the first businesses in Malaysia to actually do safety checks with customers, right?
Yeah, and riders as well.
Yeah, which is amazing, actually, because that's what's most important, right? The most important is obviously their safety, whoever you're interacting with, whether it's riders or people that you're actually serving the burgers to. So you became like a real source of trust, I wanted to say, for people when you put out a call out on social media offering to run errands for people who were quarantined at home. Can you share that story?
Okay. So what happened was, I think Malaysians were very chill about the whole pandemic thing until the lockdown. So as you mentioned, we were one of the first few restaurants that called for temperature measurement and so on. And when the lockdown happened, the first thing that I wanted to give assurance to my team as a good leader was that, don't worry, we won't let anyone go. I will keep everyone's salary. However, that comes with a price, meaning that even if there was no sales, we still had to pay people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was very naive at that point in time because I thought that what's the worst? This lockdown at best is 1 month, 2 months.
No one could have predicted how long it went on for. Yeah.
So for the first 1 month, we had an excess of staffing due to the fact that people were not coming out to eat. People, you know, remember the time when people were buying a ton of toilet paper and groceries and to cook at home? Yeah. So the first 1 month, people were cooking at home for the most part. But then they realized that, I don't know, maybe their cooking are terrible and then they wanted to eat out. So that was when sales started picking up. But during the period when sales was very slow for us, we also know that there were a lot of problems within the community, such as the older folks found it hard to have access to groceries. And at one point, I don't know whether there was a huge difference between Malaysia and Singapore, but at that time, for Malaysia, there was a time that the elder folks were allowed to come out to go shopping or something along that line. But again, they were having a problem accessing or coming out because they used to rely on other people to fetch them and so on. So there was all these things that was an issue. So we saw the problem and we said, hey, since we have extra manpower, we put it out there and ask anyone that needed help. Or if, you know, because of the lockdown, the kids are in Penang, but parents are in KL and they needed help to do grocery shopping, we were happy to do that for them. So I think that was the campaign that you talked about. And I think a lot of people responded to it and put us in a very good light. So to me, it was a win-win. You know, we already were paying salary anyway, and we had manpower and people needed the manpower to go get things done. So being in F&B, we were able to travel around because we were part of the essential services. So that was, I thought, a very good use of our time and manpower.
And that didn't evolve into a business arm of yours, right?
It didn't. That's right after that, I think second month, third month onwards, because of the good deed that we did, people were also talking about it. And then as people started ordering more food online, we were one of the, you know, top choices in terms of giving support to. There's a lot of call for, you know, local support local. And thankfully, we were part of that list that people wanted to support. So that did well for us. But of course, there were still occasional calls that came in that would ask for help. And I would run those errands myself if my team were not able to do so. So we tried to, again, it was a very rough time for everyone, but it was also a very good time to show humanity, to show that, you know, we are all humans and we should be there for one another, you know, when it's at our toughest.
Yeah, exactly. So just now you actually mentioned that you were being naive, right, with the way you thought about business and trying to retain as many staff as possible, even though you weren't earning money. How would you have done things differently now, knowing what you know now?
Honestly, I would not have changed a thing. My partner might disagree. For me, you know, I wouldn't be here if not for the team that I have. Yeah. So taking care of them was the least that I could do. So obviously, you know, even if business didn't pick up, it was my responsibility to find ways to make business work, to get, you know, more business coming in. But thankfully, like I said, it was through the good deeds that we do out of sincerity that in this way, came the reward or came good karma that, you know, people continue to buy from us. In fact, you know, I'm proud to say that in the 2 years that we were in lockdown, we did our highest sales and we made sure that the team was fully paid and even got bonuses.
Wow, that's amazing, man. That's difficult to do.
It was tough. It was very tough. But I had to pay a price for it later on once pandemic ended. But that's a different story altogether.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about after that, right? After the pandemic, since we are already in 2024. So what's on your horizon now? What are your struggles or your challenges now that you're facing today?
Let's not go as recent as today, but I would like to share, you know, in 2022, we had a bit of, I don't know to call it a fallout, but definitely a change of plans within the co-founders and everyone wanted to go their separate way. And that became a bit of a stalemate, unfortunately. So what transpired was that the business coming out of the pandemic, due to everyone wanting different things, business was running as usual, but we didn't have a lot of, we weren't able to push for sales, let's just put it that way. And sales was slowly dwindling. And to the point where, due to rising costs on the food side and also on the labor wages side, we burned out a lot of our money, and to the point where we only had 3 to 4 months runway.
It must have been nerve-wracking.
It was.
To know that you have 3 to 4 months.
Yeah. I would say that, you know, it's nobody's fault. Hindsight, you know, to me, well, I was angry at that point, and I was also very emotional at that point. Now that I'm looking back, it was nobody's fault. It was everyone's right to walk away from the business should they want to, lah, right? And in the end, a deal was struck. I have a new partner now. So my new partner, Lotus Capital, came in, invested in us, and, you know, we were able to align on the goals that we want to achieve, which is, you know, to continue to expand my Burger Lab and bring it to an international stage, and to get halal certification from Malaysia, because we've been serving mostly non-Muslim crowd for a very long time. Our Muslim friends do come in, but if you want to serve mass market, we do need the halal certification. And that is a huge task for a brand like us, which have already expanded up to 7-8 outlets at that point in time. So good news is 2023, we have managed to expand it to 4 new outlets, and we have gotten, you know, most of our stores halal certified. So this year, we are a little bit more focused on just cleaning things up a little bit more, getting our legacy stores refurbished, and then continue with expansion plans.
Okay, congratulations on opening the new stores though.
Thank you.
Okay. I mean, okay, let's talk a little bit more about the co-founder situation, right? Yeah, so co-founder relationships can be tricky, and the dynamics between your original co-founders and you is always it's almost like a relationship, right? You have to constantly maintain it, constantly keep up with it. What would you say was the biggest lesson that you learned from the separation between you and your original co-founders?
So I bet everyone that's listening to this right now is thinking the saying that, you know, you don't go into business with your friends is true. I would like to debunk that, right? Because if you don't go into business with your friends, are you going to go into business with your enemies, right? Or people you don't know? So I am very glad that, you know, we get myself and Chao Ming did come to work on this project together, and that we did survive each other for the last 8 years.
And that's a feat in its own. I mean, a relationship for eight years is a long time.
But what I think in hindsight we could have done better, and I could have done better as well, was that to have a shareholders agreement. I think because we were friends, we just kumbaya, we just thought everything was going to work out, and we didn't talk about the tough scenarios that might arise, you know. And at the time, we were all single, we were all, you know, life is free. But once you get married, once you have children, once you have, you know, just changes in life.
Yeah.
And your priorities become different. And I think that's everyone's right to have that change in priority. And so going into any business, I think any advice that I can give is to know what's the exit plan. And this one, I have to give credit to my partner, Riget, back in the days, where he did talk about exit plan. And I shut it down. I was very naive. I was very stupid. I said, what are you talking about exit plan? We are only 3 months into the business. You know, we're going to do this forever. But again, upon hindsight, he was definitely wise beyond his years.
He was the realist. You were the idealist.
Yes, exactly. but that's also why we worked very well together back in the days. But yeah, even though, you know, we all go in with our eyes wide bright and just, you know, having the best intention for the business, we have to talk about the what ifs, the worst case scenarios. And when the worst case scenarios happen, what are the terms and conditions that we all should agree to abide by? And too many businesses, especially startups, go in with too much good intention that they don't talk about it, they don't think about it, and worse, they know about it, but they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, everyone pays the price 3-4 years down the road. I mean, I'm sure we have seen businesses that overnight suddenly shut down and we wonder why. And these are some of the reasons why.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of stats out there that show that businesses collapsing is because of co-founders falling out, right?
Yeah.
Or not having the proper structure or policies in place when it comes to succession, or what happens if,
exactly,
I don't know, someone decides they want to leave the business.
Exactly.
So would you say that founders should actually seek professional advice to do these kind of things, or do you think they can do it more like a casual write-up of an agreement, if that's even possible?
I think both. Step one is do it yourself first and then get a professional to come in and run through the numbers. Because a professional will come in and probably add a lot more salt and pepper into the situation, and it just becomes more messy. I think have a open talk about the potential situation, right? Who has what life plans in the coming years? And once we have established that, and then get someone professional to build a structure around that.
So just now we spoke about your goals. So you said that you were going to clean up your business, right? So what else is in your plans? Any expansion plans, or is that currently shelved for a moment?
There are expansion plans. We are eyeing coming down to JB. So we'll be slightly closer to you.
Nice.
So because we have been very focused in the KLPJ area, so we want to, you know, have a taste of those Singaporean dollars. So thought it would be easier to go into JB first, test the market, see how things go. And then international waters, hopefully in the next 2 years. Honestly, we are, because the partnership is still fairly new, it's only the first year since we got combined as one entity. Yeah. We are basically taking stock on, you know, what happened the last year, what can be done better, how could the working relationship be improved. So it was something that I learned as well. We used to just blast forward without talking about, you know, what happened last year and whatnot. So right now, I'm trying to make sure that going forward, we always have a debrief on the year, could have been better managed. So there's no pent up issues. So me and my previous partners, because we have so many pent up issues, when things started breaking down, everything poured out, and like, could have said this 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So after 1 year, we are taking a backseat to just debrief and connect ourselves. And then I think the second half of the year, we will definitely be expanding. We're also working on franchise / licensing model as well. I don't want to do too much business talk because I think everyone does that. I mean, the scaling of the business should come naturally, but that is part of the plan. For me, I just want to make sure that there's stability in the business. People who are working with us are happy and that they feel contented where they are, and they want to have, and they have the desire to want to grow with us. Because we can say we want to scale all we want, but if the staff that is working with us don't have that same alignment, or they're already thinking about leaving or going elsewhere, then there's no expansion, right? So we want to make sure that it's done organically and also with everyone's best intention.
Okay. So what's one thing that you wish founders like yourself would talk about more? What would you like to talk about more when it comes to the realities of being a founder or an entrepreneur or a young leader?
I think the hustle culture is overrated. I've you know, pride myself back in the days that, oh, you know, I work 7 days a week. I work how many hours a day?
I'm so busy.
Yeah, and we're so busy when we wear it like a badge. But
yeah,
honestly, as I, maybe I'm old and tired, I don't know. But, you know, having time for yourself, for your loved ones, and enjoying life a little bit. Would you believe it? You know, we started in 2012, and I didn't get to travel overseas up until 2018, 2019.
Oh, wow. Seven years into your business, you didn't take a holiday?
I wouldn't say didn't take a holiday. There were trips abroad, whether it was study trips, whether it was going to expos and whatnot, but truly going out and just having a holiday and just enjoying myself. And that was the first time I had it. When I was going through my hustle years, I was like, oh, this is worth it. And I don't want to go back on my own words, but I wish I could have taken a break and just rewarded myself for all the even small successes that we've achieved. Yeah, so celebrate the small wins. Don't be too hard on yourself. Learn to enjoy life. Even if you hustle so hard, no one's going to thank you. So be nice to yourself, and then naturally you will take care of your team because you were nice to yourself.
Did something change that you suddenly had a change in perspective towards hustling?
The pandemic, man. I worked through the pandemic. I mean, again, why I was able to take a break in 2018 and 2019 was because things were a lot more stable, and I had a lot more, I was able to let go. So I think part of it is also myself being able to let go. And then, so I had a good 2018, 2019, I was able to relax a little bit. Then 2020, I was full hands on again because, you know, I want to make sure that we as a captain, I want to sail through this storm that we have.
I was survival mode, right?
Yes,
it
is.
Everyone had to be very involved.
Yes, everyone was doing that. So I stepped up and you know, sailed the ship again for the next 2 years. And coming out of it, you know, we were still busting our asses. We were still working very hard. But I also found myself a fiancé, and I realized that, hey, you know, there's more to life than just work hustle. Find a balance between that.
Yeah. Okay, so this show is all about the unexpected stories of people that we may not know about. What do you think people find most surprising about you or your journey or your business or something you haven't spoken about that much about to media or to people?
I hate to disappoint you, but
I'm already disappointed by hearing that.
I mean, I've always lived my life as an open book, and people know me for who I am, and I'm you know, I speak my mind. Sometimes my partner is afraid that I speak my mind too much. Is there something that I would like people to know about me that I don't show her? I'm of a larger size body, but I'm very athletic. I like to play sports, if that's one takeaway. But other than that, I think that,
that's fine. You live life as an open book. That's fair. I think it's okay.
Yeah. I think that I've done a good job living life as an open book as much as I can. I mean, I don't go around on social media trying to post every single thing that I do. But if you meet me, you know, people know that I have no filter. I would say what's on my mind. And you know, I try not to mince my word too much.
Yeah. Okay. Final couple of questions.
Yes.
What would be your best advice to people who want to build their own business or build their own F&B joint?
All right. I would say go into the industry first. Too many times I've seen business owners having a bit of cash on hand and wanting to start their own business, which is great. Not having the experience and thinking that it's easy. F&B is a lot of work, a lot of dirty work.
Yeah.
And you got to get your hands dirty. So at least for 1 year, 2 year, work for somebody that you look up to, that you think you can learn from and understand the industry before you hop in. Very lucky. We got lucky, in fact, since we started the business, because people might say, hey, Rini, you say that, but you jumped into it, you know, head first. But we got lucky. We you know, did a few things right, not knowing that they were the right things to do. But not everyone is that lucky, right? Mm-hmm. So an F&B, for every success story that you hear of, there's another 100 to 1,000 of failures that are out there. So go into the business, understand it a little bit more, and then decide whether you want to be in F&B. It's not an easy industry. I would recommend everyone to do it. In fact, one of the most famous thing that I heard 2 years after I started my business, and this was at a F&B sharing session, this person said that, I would never recommend my friends and family to go into F&B. However, I would recommend my enemies to go into F&B.
Would you agree?
I would say so as well. And by the time I heard that, I was already 2 years into my business. I was like, dang, I wish someone told me this before.
So actually, would you go into F&B again, knowing what you know now? Do it all over again?
In a heartbeat. I think it's part of my DNA. I complain about it a lot. But we are also, say this, I think people at F&B love to torture ourselves. But with the pain comes the joy of serving people, seeing people smile, eating your food.
You know, the rewards outweighs, right?
There are. And then, of course, as a business owner, you see your team grow and your career path. That's a career progression. So those things are rewards that you know, that makes us feel that it's worth it. But it really depends. If you are all about the money and whatnot, I don't know, go into crypto or go do property. It would be better to find your cash cow there. Here, it's tough.
So at the very beginning of this podcast recording, right, you mentioned that you are the happiest when you're having fun. Would you say that you are happy right now where you
I'm
are?
I'm very happy. I mean, I don't want to disguise it as, you know, I don't think life is about having one spectrum at any given time, right? I have my own problems in business and so on. But I find ways to be happy about where I am. I am blessed. I am contented. I want more, right? But if I turn back time and the 12 years ago me look at where we are right now, he would be very proud of us. So that makes me happy.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Rini, for joining us on Crazy Smart Asia. It's been a really, really amazing conversation. I had so much fun.
Thank you so much, Xiaowei. You've been great as well, and it's my pleasure to be here.
That's it for yet another episode of Crazy Smart Asia. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to follow us wherever you're listening to this. Crazy Smart Asia is produced by Josie Kota and edited, mixed, and mastered by Ben Beheshti. Genty's digital editor is Valerie Lim. Crazy Smart Asia is hosted by me, Chong Xiaowei. In the meantime, do remember,
celebrate the small wins. Don't be too hard on yourself. Learn to enjoy life. Even if you hustle so hard, no one's going to thank you.
See you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.